festiwal będzie poświęcony ziemi. I'm just, you know. Okay, thank you. I przed jedną z moich powrotów do Jerusalem przeczytałem w Jerusalem Post, że jest taka niezwykła postać, która nazywa się dr Tova Dickstein. I ona zajmuje się właściwie całe życie tym, czym co jedli, jak jedli. Tą dietą biblijną, nie w rozumieniu tego, jak chudnąć, albo tylko jak to było 2000 lat temu. W tym sensie zajmowanie się tą dietą, biblijną dietą, odzwierciedla też w niezwykle ważny sposób czasy, w których na przykład dla wielu państwa ważne, bo żył wtedy Jezus. I poznaliśmy się na... Nie wiem, kto z państwa był w Jerozolimie. Okej. Okay. Byliście państwo na Machne Juda? Na tym... Aha. Jest taki wielki targ. Tam poznaliśmy się, rozmawialiśmy i oczywiście stało się, że dr Tova Dickstein przyjedzie do Krakowa i będzie opowiadała... No właśnie. Zaraz zobaczymy o czym. W każdym razie jest kuratorką ogrodu botanicznego w Jerusalem, w Jerozolimie i zajmuje się generalnie rzecz biorąc ziemią, ale w najgłębszym tego sensie znaczenia, to znaczy matką ziemią. So, ladies and gentlemen, I have a great, great privilege and honor to introduce you the one of the most important person in terms of the Israel land, Eretz Israel, and the earth, who knows actually everything about the earth and especially about the fruits of our earth. And particularly, I think, I don't know if you are going to focus on the time of the Yehoshua or Jesus, whatever. No, we will not touch this. About Jesus, maybe. Anyway, I would love to welcome very cordially. It's the first time in Krakow during the Jewish Culture Festival. Mrs. Dr. Tova Dickstein, who hopefully will be able to come back to us till the end of the days.
Wow. Okay, I don't know what he told you, but I am a doctor for food, ancient food.
Speak to the mic.
This one. So I see. Okay, I don't understand Polish, so I don't know what he told you, but my PhD is about biblical food. Not only biblical, but ancient food of Israel. And this lecture, it's not a lecture, it's workshop. You will get a few foods to taste at last, at the end of it. This lecture is telling about the lost symbols of the plate, on the plate. What the plate we are talking about is the Seder plate or Passover plate. It's a symbolic traditional plate that placed on the table during the eve of the Seder, of the Pesach, and displays six symbolic foods that their meaning had been lost during the generations. And I want to reveal them and to discover them and to tell about them. Okay, so I am with technology not so well, but okay. Passover is a very important day in the Jewish tradition because Passover was the first step of the unification of the people Israeli as a nation. And we talk about the first Passover in Egypt. It was the night of the Exodus from Egypt. And the Exodus story, it became a very important role in the Jewish history and also in Christianity. Okay, so we had commanded to tell it from generation to generation, and we will see why it's so important. one more. Okay. In Christianity, it's also very has a big has important role because the wine and the bread at the last meal symbolize where the wine and the matzot on Passover night, as you know, I'm sure. Okay, so let's try with the first symbol. This one. No, we will do it again. Okay, the first symbol is a plant. It's called in Hebrew ezov, in English hyssop, and in Arabic za'atar. Few weeks before the Exodus from Egypt, Moses get a set of instructions from God. And God tell Moses that if in few weeks the people of Israel are going to Exodus from Egypt. You know, Moses, you know the story. Maybe I'll tell it very shortly. The people of Israel were slaves in Egypt. They worked very hard and they suffered a lot. So God sent, according to the story, according to the Bible, God sent Moses to save them. And at the day they got, the Egyptian got 10 plagues, you know. And this was, the Exodus was the last flag, the flag of the firstborn, in which every firstborn in Egypt shall die at the first, at the, this flag. So God tell Moses that in order to avoid the entering of the death who wander in the street, they must have sacrificed a lamb and to mark the doorstops and the lentil with its blood. Okay. Moses gave the instructions to the people, but he added one detail of its own that is not mentioned in God's instruction. And what is this? You shall take a bunch of hyssop. Moses told the people of Israel to take a bunch of hyssop and to dip it in the blood. Why bunch of hyssop? Why not a brush? What is the importance? What is the uniqueness of this plant? And who is the hyssop? The hyssop is the Bible hyssop. It's a wild oregano growing everywhere in the wild in Israel near rocks. In Arabic it's called za'atar, in English hyssop, and it's hairy and very strong smell. But what is the uniqueness of this plant? Why? Okay. We can find the answer in another place in the Bible, another places in the Bible. For example, the story about David and Bathsheba. Maybe you heard about this story, and I'm going to tell you. One day, David woke up from his midday nap and went on the roof, and from the roof, he saw a beautiful woman having a bath. So David inquired, who is she? And sent his people to bring her to him, to his palace. She got pregnant, Bathsheba. And David had now a problem because Bathsheba was married to Uriah, a high commander in his own army. The army was at the battlefield in Ammon, Rabat Ammon, Jordan today. And David didn't join the army. He stayed at home. But now what is going to do? So he asked from Yoav, his chief commander, to send Uriah back to home with so-called news from the battle, from the war. And he hoped that Uriah will go to his home and that will be okay. But Uriah refused. And he said to David, sorry, but how can I go to have a bath and to lie with my wife and my soldiers are parking on the street, on the fields? So after that, David saw that there is nothing to do with him. He cannot do anything. So he sent it back, him back to the battlefield, and a letter in his hand. And in the letter, it was written to Yoav, put him in the front of the line of the war. And Uriah was killed, as he thought. So David married Bathsheba. But few days later, do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, everything is okay? Tell me if not, and don't hesitate to correct me, because usually I don't speak English. I'm lecturing in Hebrew, so I need to translate it in my head. Okay, so you forgive me, okay? Okay, so after a while, after the marriage, the prophet, Nathan the prophet, came to the state, Nathan the prophet, never mind, came to David and told him a story. And in the story, he told him, there was one poor man in a village, who lived in a village, and he owned only one lamb that he raised her as his daughter. He fed her, and treated her like his daughter. And in the same village, lived another man, very rich, with flocks and cattle. And one day, a guest came to the rich man, and he slaughtered the poor lamb, the poor's lamb, and gave it to his guest. So David was furious, and he cries, "This man is liable to death." And the prophet Nathan says, "You are the man. You are the man." After that, David understood what he's done. And he wrote a psalm in the Psalm 51 in Book of Psalms, the Psalms book. And in the psalm he said, it's a psalm for David after Nathan the prophet came to him after he came to with Bathsheba, something like that, sorry. But in the psalms, David said, "Purify me with hyssop. Purify me. Purify me with hyssop." And in Hebrew, to purify, the same meaning as, it's the same root as sin. In Hebrew, it's lechate velachto. Sin is lachto, and to purify or disinfect is lechate. So it's double meaning. But when in the Torah says that if man touch dead body or corpse or something, he is impurified, and in order to get clean, he had to get spread with water. People had to spread on him water with bunch of hyssop. So we can understand that hyssop is a purifying and disinfect plant. Okay? You can see the... Okay. Studies revealed that hyssop is very strong antibiotic, antifungal, and antivirus. Very, very strong. New studies, like 5 years ago, found. So now we can understand that the hyssop is also it's very strong in against disease, and very strong shield against disease, and they knew it. They didn't know about germs or bacteria, but they knew that the hyssop defends from death. So if we go back to the story of the Exodus, we can understand that the hyssop that Moses asked from the people of Israel to spread, to mark the doorstep with hyssop in order to purify their homes, their self, and disinfect their home. This is one meaning. But the hyssop has another meaning, and maybe most important, most significant. And the other meaning is that the hyssop is the smallest of the trees in the Bible. If you see Solomon, yeah. King Solomon spoke about the trees from the cedar in Lebanon till the hyssop that goes out from the wall. The hyssop grows near walls. They need They need stones. So this, the hyssop is the smallest of the trees, and that's how it symbolizes modesty, humility in the Jewish tradition. So maybe Moses wanted to tell them something else. Maybe he wanted to tell them that in that moment, that children that have not seen, are dying, it's not a time of celebration or happy or joy. They have to be modest like the hyssop. They have been low and modest because it's not the time to celebrate. And an ancient legend tells that even the soldier of Pharaoh drowned in the sea, the angels sang. And God tell them, the creation of my hands are drawing in the sea and you are singing in front of me? Okay. This is the hyssop. Hyssop also has a part in the Christianity, in the New Testament, the story about the crucifixion, people who were there at the crucifixion, deep hyssop in vinegar and handed it to the lips of Jesus when he was on the... And people, there is no, it's not clear if it's a compassion act or abuse act, but we know that it was a compassion act because vinegar in the Jewish tradition, the ancient Jewish tradition, is a painkiller. And people use it to relieve from pain. And hyssop maybe is a symbol of purity and modesty. So as Jesus. So maybe there is a connection. I'm not so sure, but I think it's not in vain that they gave him hyssop and not something else. Okay? Good. Another important food on the Passover table is, of course, the matzah. Who knows why do we eat matzah at Passover? You know what matzah is, the flat bread. Why do we eat matzot? Why was matzah on the table of the last meal? What is matzah? The common opinion says that the matzah is the unleavened bread that people of Israel baked in the desert after they get out from Egypt very in haste. And they didn't have time to bake bread, so they bake unleavened bread, right? You know, right? This story. But this is the common opinion, and everyone say it. But if you read very carefully chapter 12 in Exodus book, you will find that the commandment to eat matzah on the Passover night, the first Passover night, was given to them, to the people of Israel, in the same set of instructions they got 3 weeks before Passover. So, the matzah, there is no connection between the story of baking matzah in the desert and the matzah on the table, of the table seder, and the matzah of Passover. So it must have another symbol. Do you understand what I said? If God bothered to tell the people of Israel to use matzah, why he care? So the matzah has a symbol. And we can understand the symbol if we understand the state of the bread in ancient time. Bread was not only a pastry in ancient time. Bread is the main food. In Hebrew, the word bread, and not only in Hebrew, it's a generic name for livelihood and existence, okay? And because bread was so important in Arabic Egyptian, bread calls Aish, which means life. Bread was life. And it's not only regular bread. Bread in Egypt, the Egyptian called bread eaters. They were the first to discover the secret of fermentation. And they were first to discover the sourdough. Sourdough, it's a lump of yeast. You know, you put dough outside for a few days and it's observed yeast from the air and ferment. And if you put it in another dough, in a new dough, it raise it like a few hours instead of few days. So when all over the ancient world people ate matzah and flat bread, they ate bread, and bread was in Egypt, it was the food of the priest, the food of the idols. Even they offered bread to their idols. There was the bread of the farmers and the bread of the slaves. It was very, very important to all in Egypt. Here you can see the bakery of Pharaoh, the second, Ramses II, who is our Pharaoh in the Bible. And you see how many types of bread they baked in just in his bakery, his own bakery. You can see they need the daf is their leg. Herodotus, the historian, the Greek historian, tells that the Egyptians were very strange. They need the daf with their legs, not with their hands. But here we can see that it's true. The Egyptians also invented the oven. To bake bread, you need oven. You need heat from all the sides. Not like matzah, you put it in a coil or something under a coil. So the Egyptians even invented the ovens. That's why it is so, the bread so characterized Egypt. On the other hand, here you have found Egyptian bread, 2000 years BC. And here it's the sourdough. And you see, for the commandment on Passover is not to eat leavened bread and not to eat sourdough. And here you can see down that somebody succeeded to bake a bread with yeast that he found in a jar from 3,700 years ago in Egypt. They still had the yeast. Okay. On the other side, the ancestor of Israeli nation were shepherds. And shepherds don't eat bread, sour bread. They eat flat bread. Why? Because they cannot wait the dough to raise, or they cannot carry with them heavy oven. Oven were from stones. There was not, like today. They were not like today. So shepherds, the bread of the shepherds is matzah, flat bread. The Egyptians hated very much the shepherds. They called them looters, or chaviro, ivro, evri, passing by, because shepherds are always passing. The Egyptians were agriculture, but the shepherds, passing. And in the year of famine, they graze over the fields of the Egyptian, the agriculture. So it's always a hate between the shepherds and the agricultures. And here you see the Sarah, this from Genesis, the story that Sarah gave three angels who came to tell her that she's going to, at 90, at 90 age, she is going to have a boy. And of course she laughed. But Abraham gave them a matzah. Cake is a round matzah. Okay? Abraham was a shepherd. The Bedouin still bake today, you see, I flat bread, the same bread, the same matzah as the ancient Hebrew ate thousands of years ago. The Bedouins are shepherds. Okay. Now we can understand why. We can see the gap between the two cultures, the agriculture and the shepherds, in the joint meal Joseph prepared to his brothers. To remind, Joseph was the beloved son of Yaakov. He was a dreamer, and Jacob loved him very much, and his brother, they were envy with him, and they sold him to merchants who get down to Egypt. In Egypt, he solved the dream of Pharaoh and became viceroy. He had a very important position in Egypt. And when his brother came after a moving reunion, he prepared them a meal. But it says that his servant put the bread for him separately from his brothers, because the shepherds, despite the agriculture, the Egyptians despised the shepherds. So now we can understand why. Now we can understand the meaning of the matzah. It's not. The meaning is maybe symbolize the transition from the land of slaves, the land of the Egypt, to their ancient culture as a shepherd, and to the moving back to their ancestral land. Okay, the matzah. Did you understand what I said? Yeah, sure. Okay, I'm not sure if I make it correct, but this is the battle between the agriculture and the shepherds, and the bread symbolized the matzah symbolized the shepherd's culture, and the sour bread symbolized Egypt. And on the Passover, you don't have to eat Egyptian bread. Okay, shepherds also are free from the yoke of power, so it's also symbolized freedom. The matzah also symbolizes freedom. Okay, let's go on. Another part of the Seder plate, another dish, another food on the Seder plate is merorim, bitter herbs. God commanded the people of Israel to eat the lamb with bitter herbs. So why with bitter herbs? What is bitter herbs? The ancient rabbis explained that bitter herbs symbolize the bitter life the people of Israel had in Egypt. But today in the east country of Europe, the Jewish who came from the Ashkenazi Jewish use chazeret. Chazeret means horseradish. Do you know horseradish? Chrein, okay? But the sages, the ancient rabbis, give five plants to the role of bitter herbs. And it's called chazeret. Never mind, in Hebrew, chazeret, olesh, temak, you have the name. But chazeret in ancient Hebrew is lettuce. It's not chrein. The word of Chazeret, the Talmud, the literature, the ancient literature, Aramaic translate the Hebrew Chazeret in Aramaic as lettuce. And lettuce also, it's the same name, Chazeret, Chasa, in Hebrew is Chaza, it's the same name in Arabic. So, Chazeret is the ancient name for lettuce, not Chorein. And why people use Chorein? Or horseradish, because when the people of Israel came to the, you know, went to exile in Europe, they didn't find lettuce in the spring, so they replaced it with the roots, the sharp roots, but it's not bitter. It's even sometimes little sweet, right? So this is the. So if you are Jewish and you eat chrein as a bitter, stop. It's the lettuce. Okay. But maybe there is another meaning for the bitter herbs, and it's connect with the shepherd culture and agriculture culture. Because bitter herbs in all the translation of the Bible are wild herbs, wild plants that people gather them from the wild to cook for cooking and salad. That is the meaning of the wild bitter herbs. Even in Crete, even today, they use the word bitter herbs as to wild plants, wild vegetables, okay? Egypt, on the other hand, was famous with her garden vegetables. When the people of Israel are going to enter their new country, Moses tells them that Egypt is not like Israel. He wants to help them to understand what they are going to enter, what country they are going to enter. And he said, it's not like Egypt. In Egypt, you have the Nile, and you have water all years. But in Israel, and you can water your garden, your vegetable garden. But in Israel, you don't have. So Egypt was very different from Israel. And the Jewish people of Israel wandered in the desert, they missed the vegetables, the Egyptian vegetables. The only time vegetables are mentioned in the Bible is the Egyptian vegetables, because they had water. And in Israel, they don't have water anymore. So this is also a symbol of shepherds, that they collect the wild herbs. And it's also a symbol of Israel, the bitter herbs. Why? Because botanical findings found that all the vegetarian they had in the biblical time was wild plants. They didn't find anything that connect with garden vegetable. So this is the vegetable of Israel, and it's again the transition from Egypt to Israel, the tradition from the culture of the agriculture to the culture of the shepherds and to their ancestor agriculture. Okay? Maybe, but I think it's more convenient that only the bitter life in Egypt. Okay. You are okay? Another dish, sweet dish, is charoset, and we prepared it already, and you will get to taste it. The charoset is not, charoset is a sweet dip that the Jewish dip it, the bitter herb in it, we don't know why, but it's a custom. It was not mentioned in the Bible. It's a custom that started on the second century after in the second century, and it was not a mitzvah. It's just a custom. And one of the rabbi in the Talmud, the literature that was written in the third century, said that we dip the bitter herb in charoset in order to eliminate the poison of the charoset, of the lettuce. The poison of the lettuce. Why lettuce? It's poison. So today, the lettuce is sweet and not poisoning. But the wild lettuce that we have it here, we had to have it here. Here. The charoset, just the charoset symbols, as the rabbi said, the work with bricks and mud, and that the people of Israel worked in Egypt, they built two cities, Ramses and Pharaoh, with brick they made from mud and straw. So the charoset contains apples and spice, ginger, like ginger, that looks like straw when you cut it. Sorry, what I did? Okay. You see the hard work of the people, the slaves in Egypt, that it's from Bnei Hassan. It's a real picture of a grave, from a grave of Bnei Hassan. Okay. The wild lettuce. So what is the wild lettuce? Why the lettuce is poisoning? We don't speak about the cultural lettuce. We speak about the wild lettuce that we had the plants here. I brought it here, but they forgot to put it here. Okay, the wild lettuce, I pick it up from the parking there. You have it here in Poland also. The name is Lactuca seriola, but it's in Hebrew, it's compass lettuce, because it's look like a compass, and the leaves are going to south and north. You see? Are pointing south and north. But the lettuce, the wild lettuce, has sap. Oh, here it is. Now I understand why you didn't bring it. It doesn't look like in the picture. But see the leaves? Like hour ago they turned north and south, but now they're south. No, I'm sorry. But it looks like this. And this is also, we found here in the parking lot, this is the bitter herb also. This is called maror in Hebrew. And it's also the bitter herb that the sages give a list of 5 bitter herbs. This is one of them. Okay. Sorry. Forgot. I'm not good with technology, I'm sorry. And not even with English, but you will forgive me. Okay, those two plants, we found them here. Those are the original bitter herbs. The Yemenites used this plant in the Passover. And the Shomronim, the Samarites, use this one. And not vegetable, not lettuce. Okay, but this plant, I don't recommend to test, has a poison sap. It's not poisoning, but it's narcotic. It's narcotic. And once it was called the opium of the lettuce. And you can see a quotation from a Greek, ancient Greek, who said to his wife, "Don't give me lettuce for dinner, woman, or you can blame only yourself. It's food for corpses." So it's, you know, make a sleep things that you don't want them to get sleep after dinner. Okay, so this is the wild lettuce, this is the bitter herbs, and now we can even assume that the bitter herbs, they're the same role that, like the matzah. They symbolize the herbs of Israel, the bitter herbs of the shepherds, and the transition from Egypt to Israel and to the culture of their ancestors. Okay. If you don't believe me, a lot of problem. No, we don't eat. Okay. There is a chef named Epicurus who lived 2,000 years ago, and he gives a recipe to harmless salad. In order to eliminate the poison of the salad, he gave a recipe that it looked like the charoset we use today, the charoset, the sweet dip, you will taste it. It's include vinegar and apple, and the vinegar, the ancient charoset, was sharp and sour, and not like today. In order to eliminate the poisoning of the poison of the sap of the lettuce, okay? So here a recipe, ancient recipe, seems like our charoset. Okay, what is the time? Another two dishes we have. We have Pesach and Chagiga. Pesach is the sacrifice of the Pesach sacrifice that was the first time. But in the temple, when the temple was existence, the temple's existence, they used to sacrifice in the temple the lamb. Temple, there were three pilgrimage events in the during the year, and Passover was the most significant of them. People, it's today in Hebrew we call barbecue mangal. And today, in the Independence Day, all the Israelis are making barbecue. It's the Independence Day, the Day of the Freedom. This, in 2,000 years ago, they made mangals or barbecues in Passover. They sacrificed a lamb, then took it, roasted it in the streets. There were thousands of ovens in the streets, and they roasted it and ate it, and it was the holiday of Passover. But it was not enough. One lamb was not enough because it was divided to 10. 10 people ate one lamb, so they had a very small dish. So they sacrificed another one. It's called chagiga. In order to have more meat, they didn't eat meat. They didn't eat meat like today. They eat three times a year. Meat was very expensive, so it was a real celebration. So now in the Passover plate we find the egg. Egg is a remnant to the chagiga sacrifice, and we find a chicken or lamb is the symbolize the power, the strength of God who brought us from Egypt. God tell us that the reason we eat matzot is because the mighty hand, with my mighty hand I took you out. So this is the mighty hand, the force, the power of God. And as okay, you see the Passover in the temple, the existence on the temple. And Egypt, on the other side, the Egyptians didn't eat lamb. They hated lambs. They hated the shepherds. And the animal of Egypt is the cow, the cattle. Why? Because they plow the soil. This is the tractors of the ancient time, cattle. And it's the symbol as the agriculture. If you remember, Pharaoh dream about 7 cows and 7 7 wheat. 7 wheat, and because they were the symbol of the fertility of Egypt, and the goddess, the fertility goddess, looked like a cow, Hathor, because cow was a power. Cow was symbol of the agriculture. So that's why we eat lamb and not cow in Passover, and that's why the lamb called Passover, because God passed over the houses of the Israel who sacrificed the lamb. Okay, and last one is celery. I don't know, we put celery on the Seder plate, and maybe because during the years, at the first Passover, people used to celebrate it when they're standing up, like the first one in Egypt. But when the Hellenistic, when the Greek and the Roman conquered Israel, only slaves ate when they are standing up. So they start leaning on the left side as rich people in Rome. And the beginning of the meal in Roman custom is to eat vegetables. So the Roman meals, the Roman feast, influence the Israeli Seder. And so we eat at the beginning of the Seder, we eat eggs or vegetables. As a remnant from the Roman feast, and also we drink 4 glasses of wine, because in the Roman feast they used to drink 4 glasses, 2 at the beginning of the meal and 2 during the meal. So we had many customs that have been added during the years to the plate and to the Seder. And I think it's enough. Thank you. And I hope you understood what I said. And thank you very much. If you have questions, we have few foods here to taste. We have the charoset. I made it myself. It's very good. You can dip the lettuce in the charoset. We have matzah that was baked under coil as the ancient matzah, and you can dip it. And what we have more? Yes, we have hyssop, a dip of hyssop that you can dip and to taste what is the taste of the hyssop. Today it's a spice, today it's a herb. We use it as a herb. And bon appetit. Okay, if you